Part 12, Chapter 3. When the last coffin had gone out the open door, Johnny had silently slid out of his coffin. He had three kill clubs thrust in his belt, and he was holding a fourth, the heaviest one. He laid a picto-recorder player in the middle of the floor with one flashing motion and backed up behind the door. The shadow of Turl outside lay across the floor. The recorder started to play. It was a recording of Turl's own voice. It said,
"Jade, you silly crunch. What a crap lousy IBI agent you were."
It was playing loudly enough to be heard outside. The shadow of Turl contracted, turning. The recorder said,
"It ain't smart, Jade, to come in here worrying your betters."
Turl lunged through the door, slamming it shut with a frantic hand. He raised his boot to stamp the recorder into oblivion. Johnny dove forward. With a motion he had drilled and drilled with a dummy. The kill club crashed into Turl's skull. With his other hand, even as Turl fell forward, Johnny ripped up the pocket flap and got the remote control box to the cage. A horn was going outside.
"Coordinates holding on first stage. Motors up."
Johnny hit Turl again. The body collapsed. Johnny ripped the breathe mask off Turl's face and threw it clear to the far end of the morgue, where it landed with a clatter. He bent over Turl. Green blood was running down the side of the monster's head. The feet were drumming. Then, Turl was still. There was no breathing. The eyes seemed glazed. He would have liked to put a shot in Turl. He took the belt gun, but he didn't dare shoot. Until those wires out there started to hum, they could stop the firing. The instant the wires began to hum, he knew the process was irreversible. The bullhorn bawled,
"Stand clear!"
The wires had begun to hum. Johnny's 2 minutes had begun, and they might well be his last 2 minutes alive. He had clicked on the stopwatch on his wrist. He flashed out the door and twisted the lock closed behind him. In these 2 minutes, nobody would fire a gun, since it might hit wires or mess up coordinate settings. He took in the scene. Windsplitter was only 3 paces away from where he was supposed to be. Johnny was on him, and with one heel jab, they were running. In a flying blur, they raced to the platform. The humming was intensifying. Anything that stayed on that platform was going to go to Cyclo, where you couldn't even breathe the atmosphere. And a very messy arrival this would be if all went well. Windsplitter's hoofs hit the metal of the platform, and he reared to a stop. Whoa! As Johnny dove for the first coffin. His fingers sought the little round ring that imperceptibly stood out just under the lid at the top end. He pulled it, and a strip came away in his hand. One. Second coffin, ring found, pull, strip in hand. Two. The third coffin, ring, strip, three. A hysterical Cyclo voice came on the bullhorn.
"Clear the platform! Clear the platform!"
The small group of Cyclos beyond the coffins woke up to something strange going on. They stared. One of the executives, hung over from the party, raised his arm to point. Fourth, fifth, and sixth rings. In these coffins were 10 Planet Buster nuclear missile bombs, forbidden by treaties because they could crack the planet's crust and spray the world with fallout. Packed around them were the dirtiest early radioactive atomic bombs, outlawed because of their extreme pollution potential. The seventh ring was bent. Johnny fumbled with it.
"Grab him!"
screamed the executive on the platform. The 5 Cyclos moved to attack. Johnny threw his kill club at the executive. He went down. Johnny yanked 2 more kill clubs from his belt and hurled them in a blur of speed. 2 more Cyclos went down. He got back to number 7. He untwisted it and got it out. He grabbed number 8 and pulled it. There was a suicide squad of Scots in the bushes, standing by in case at the last moment Johnny failed. He had forbidden it, but they insisted. He had timed the run. He wanted no dead Scots. Johnny had refused to simply let the fuses be set. If the firing had been cancelled, they would have blown Earth out of existence. They had to be sure the irreversible action of actual firing was in progress before these fuse strips were pulled. 9 strips in hand. The 2 remaining cyclos had been further away, but they were coming now.
Strike!
Shouted Johnny at Windsplitter. The horse reared and struck the nearest cyclo. The last monster on the platform reached to grab Johnny. 10. Johnny struck with the kill club and smashed the cyclo's helmet. The reaching talons tore his sleeve. He struck again. He leaped to the back of Windsplitter.
Run!
Someone on the control porch had come out with a blast rifle, but did not dare shoot. The humming wires were building up to crescendo. Johnny was off the platform and racing up the hill to the cage. His watch said 42 seconds left to go. He had never known time to flow so slowly or so fast. He had not gone to Cyclo. But blast rifles were waiting to cut him down. He had already switched the remote control box he had recovered so as to shut off the current to the bars. He had gotten out the metal severing tool so he could slash off the girl's collars. Windsplitter plunged to a halt before the cage door. Johnny threw himself off the horse. He paused for an instant. The cage door was open. The wood barrier was torn aside. Where were the girls? Their effects were all here. Not up. There was a mound under the robes. Ah, they must still be asleep.
Chrissy!
He rushed in, metal tool ready to cut the collars, shouting their names.
Chrissy!
No motions in the robes. He threw the furs aside. He was staring at the corpse of Char. It lay on its back, and the stainless steel knife he had given Chrissy was sticking out of Char's middle. He had no time for speculation. He was out of the cage, staring about. Old Pork and Dancer were not there. Could it be possible the girls had actually killed Char and escaped? Not likely. Not with this remote box in Turl's possession. Seconds were ticking away. Blast rifles were waiting. He leaped on Windsplitter and dashed for the edge of the bluff. They started a small avalanche as they halted halfway down the slope. Johnny sprang off and made sure they were covered from sight. The humming came to top crescendo. The strange quiver was in the air. He recognized the feeling. The shipment had shimmered and vanished from the platform.